to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Colvin. Today I'm very pleased to have as my guest Michael Reese, the developer of RV Cronus as well as RV Geolock, and the founder of the Remote Viewing Consortium Forums. This program, which has been on the air for about 15 years, has a major interest in remote viewing. I myself was involved in early remote viewing experiments at Johns Hopkins University, and we have interviewed Joseph McMonagle on many occasions, as well as Dr. Russell Targ, who was in charge of the Stanford Research Institute development of the remote viewing program for the military. I was a major in the Air Force and also exposed to remote viewing through that venue. Michael, our guest today, was trained by Major Ed Doms, who was trained by, is it Ingo Schwartz?
Is that Ingo Swan.
Swan, yes, who was actually the major figure who was the remote viewer working with the early development of the program for the military. The program was top secret for many years, and I think I'll let Michael tell you that story on the background of it. And it has always had a problem of time and location locking in. I think Russell Targ told us that they discovered fairly early that there was no difference in remote viewing the present, past, or future in terms of difficulty. But then, of course, the question comes up as to where you are, and especially when you're trying to locate missing persons, where they are when you remote view them if you don't have something to lock onto. So, Michael, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, your experience in remote viewing, and a little bit of the history for our listeners who may not be aware of this most interesting topic?
Sure. Remote viewing, my name is Michael Reese, and obviously I created these two high-level remote viewing applications. My background is in information systems, information systems design, network engineering, and one of the things that I noticed when I first became involved in remote viewing was it's really very, very similar in many respects to what we do in network engineering and information systems design. It's just the transmitting and the reception of data over vast distances or even short distances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in our case as human individuals, human bio-minds, we are information system processors. We can store, retrieve, crunch numbers, review data, analyze it, and we draw conclusions from it. And that's all things that we do in information systems. So there's just this uncanny sort of similarity between the two. So that's what initially piqued my interest. And I had personal reasons for developing Geolock and Cronus. One of them was that I wanted to be able to find things, and the other reason, obviously, was I wanted to know when these things would occur that I was investigating. Now, remote viewing, it was developed in the early, development began in the early 70s. Our side of the Atlantic, United States military, intelligence community discovered that the Soviet Union was spending millions of dollars a year investigating psychoenergetics. So what our side did is they started researching it, and they gathered together the world's best psychics, and one in particular, Ingo Swan, was able through research and introspection, was able to discover that his psychic abilities could be codified in a sort of a protocol. So he wrote down literally a pretty much a step-by-step method of how he was remote viewing.
Right.
And what the military did, this all happened at Stanford Research Institute. So the military, they decided, well, since we have this now codified methodology of remote viewing, mm-hmm. let's see if we can train people to do it. So what they did is they took their military intelligence officers, a group of five. One of them was Ed Dames, my teacher, and of course Paul Smith was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ingo Swann taught these five military intelligence officers how to remote view.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that they noticed during the military operation phase is that you, as a remote viewer, and they, like you said, they discovered this early on, is that as a remote viewer, you can describe things with just an uncanny amount of clarity. And these things are outside of your conscious awareness. So in other words, you're in a room somewhere, and you can describe something that's happening 2,000 miles away, 3,000 miles away from you, or even further on the other side of the planet, and get extremely fine detail.
Right.
And another problem they had was being able to determine when future events would occur, or, as they discovered, they could remote view something, a specific geographic location, but they might remote view it in the future, or it might
exactly.
be in the time. So they would have to, there was this problem with time in a sense that what we discovered during the development of Chronos is that all time is happening at the same moment. In other words, the present and the past and the future are all happening right now.
I just want to interject here that you have some very good videos explaining that, because I was just watching them online. You might want to refer the audience to some of these videos that outline, you know, the qubits and the time issues so that they can actually see it, because you've done a great job of doing those little DVDs.
Yeah, thank you. That's actually a good idea. You can actually see some excerpts from our Chronos and Geolock videos if you go to two websites. So one of them is rvchronos.com. That's rvchronos.com. And also by going to rvgeolock.com. That's rvgeoloc. And the Chronos site specifically has several videos there that explain pretty thoroughly what I'm going to sort of just gloss over right here.
Right.
And that is that time is all happening at the same time. What we discovered is that the matrix, and the matrix is what we as remote viewers refer to as it's sort of like a database, is mm-hmm. to put it in information technology terms. Or you can also think of it as a universal Google. You go to google.com, you type in a search parameter, and you get back information. And essentially,
it's really similar to that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we do.
We
define a search parameter,
right?
And we query the matrix. Now,
it's
an interesting thing.
it comes up on the screen.
Exactly. But the quality of the data you get mm-hmm. is directly determined by the specificity of your search parameters. So
right.
if you're going to look for something, let's say you want to know something about your Ford, I think they call them a Prius, right? And you type in the word Ford into Google, you're going to get all kinds of information
mm-hmm.
concerning Ford in the past, in the future, in the past and the present. And you're going to get all kinds of information that is for John Ford, for the John Ford Theater,
right,
and for all
right,
kinds
yeah.
of information that you just don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of the data is actually affected by how you construct your query.
Right.
And that's one of the problems that we solved in the time problem, is that military and the SRI people discovered, you had to have a temporal qualifier. If you wanted to remote view a particular location on a planet to gather some military intelligence about some, you know, chemical weapons development center in the Soviet Union, you would need to qualify your search parameter with now or present so that the matrix would give you information pertaining to that location now rather than 5 years from now or 10 years in the past. So one of the things we found was that the matrix understands our concept of linear time, and that it uses a metaphor for that. It can plot a trajectory literally from one point in time to another linearly, even though from its perspective, you can call this the God mind's perspective, that everything is occurring at once. So that was one of the major breakthroughs that we made, is that there is a metaphor for time that both humans and the matrix can understand and use to sort of plot on a line graph time.
Right.
And what we do is we integrate that into our search parameters when we're working a Kronos project. So when we want to know when the alleged events of 2012 are going to occur, we can find that out now. You know, we can now not just remote view the events of 2012, but we can determine when they will occur in time. Now, there's all kinds, you know, time is really finicky. There's like so many variables that go into how a future event actually occurs when we transit through it linearly. You know, that literally everything in the universe it determines what's going to happen. Not only are our movement through time, our decisions, but all of the things in the universe combine in a sort of aggregate calculation to determine how a future event actually pans out. And that's something that is very interesting, because what that does is, in many instances, it creates a time window. In other words, the universe is quite fatalistic, but there is this weird sort of flexibility in it where you make a decision, and instead of dying on July 1st in 2063, you made a whole series of decisions that put it off until a year later. So in other words, the fatalistic nature of the universe remains intact, but there's this wiggle room that you get, so there's a time window for just about every single event.
You described this in one of your videos as saying that you estimate that about 80% is destiny, but about 20% is influenced by free will.
Yes.
I mean, if you know how to do it. I mean, you know, I've done it many times. I mean, I've seen something right ahead, and I said, no, I don't want that to happen. And then, I mean, a real strong intent, and it did not happen. And yet, I still had the same thing, the effect of it, happen in another way, in another time.
Exactly.
You know, you can't get past, like, mine was breaking my arm. One of my spiritual teachers said that I was going to be in a car wreck, and I have a Corvette, and I really like my cars. I said, no, you know. But then I fell at the office and broke my arm, because I had to break my arm, because I was trying to get lung cancer, of all things. And and I could feel where it was, because I'm also a medical intuitive, and I didn't like what I felt, but I didn't get a chest x-ray. You know how that goes. And then when I fell, I just spent 4 months resting, and then I got over it. You know, I mean, I'm fine now. But I had to break my arm, because I had to not die of lung cancer because I had work to do.
and that's an excellent example of that fatalistic nature of reality. Certain things are fated. Do you call it destiny, fate, whatever
destiny
you want?
To break the arm, yeah.
Certain things must occur. No matter what you do, they're going to occur.
Right.
So you can, and you can get to that point. You can go break your arm in any number of ways. You can go get a hammer and break it.
or I chose to trip over something that the maintenance guy had left up a tripwire, you know.
So, you know, there's all these ways that you can go about breaking an arm accidentally or on purpose.
Right.
But the universe has fated you through the series of events that is you to do that.
Right.
You know, so it and that's exactly what we found with Cronos. And
right.
and it, you know, eventually I think that science is going to come to the same determination and realize this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so hopefully that'll happen in the next year. So physics research is already running that direction today. It has been now for several decades.
Yeah, I wanted to just interject here that I attended a TREAT conference here in Atlanta, and I actually met the SciTech folks along with the Russian remote viewers. And I must tell you, I was very, very impressed by the Russians. They were very good. I mean, the SciTech people were very good too, but they were more military and more regimented and more, you know, just kind of, but the Russians brought into it a whole nother level. And I don't know what the Russians are doing now. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, if it continued or not. But they were fabulous. And they were really, really good from what the data presented there.
there is a thing about remote viewing is that, personally, I like to keep everything nice and regimented because mm-hmm. when you start going freeform, and I know a lot of Russians that actually do this.
They do.
And actually other people, they mm-hmm. kind of go freeform.
Mm-hmm.
But what that does is it, in a sense, looks like they're very on target. But when you get down and start digging into the data points, they're at the target site, but they're not necessarily on target. And there's a difference. So like, for instance, your incident in, conquering lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
okay? If somebody were to remote view that, say, who was freeform, they might tell you, like, the psychic, oh, you're going to be in a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
But as
yeah,
a remote
she
viewer.
She didn't say I was going to break my arm. But she described it that my car was, I was going to be a stop sign. I would go forward and somebody would T-bone me from the passenger side. Well, I don't have an airbag on my left side. And, I would have broke my left arm, which is what I broke when I fell because I'm right-handed and I'm a surgeon and, you know, it's not good for me to break my right arm. So anyway, you know, you got to be careful when you're a surgeon not to break your dominant arm.
Right. So as a remote viewer, we would have remote viewed that or could have from a theoretical standpoint, and we would have known that you wouldn't have been in a car crash, what the ultimate purpose was for you to break your arm.
Right.
Now, we would have seen that, but we may not have known exactly how that would happen. We would have just known you're going to break your arm.
You could with RV Cronus. That's the purpose of RV Cronus is finding out when something's going to happen.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly, and which is much harder question. Really, if you think
and then with Geolock, you can find out where something
is. Where it's going to happen, Very useful.
We just actually released that about a week and a half ago now.
Great.
So that just came
I haven't
out.
Seen that yet, but I watched your video you sent me on RV Cronus. But...
Oh, I'll send you a Geolock video
That'd be great.
And then you can look at that. Yeah, it's the same caliber of information mm-hmm. and walk you through how to triangulate using remote viewing data. So it's really neat. It's not anything at all like if your listeners have heard of Ed Dames' Geofix, not anything like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different technology. But very, very accurate to the point where when we were in the testing phase, our intermediate remote viewers were able to get to within 150 feet of the target.
Well, that's wonderful.
And so it would be triangulated, and you know, it would be right in the triangle.
Well, that has great use in both civilian and more government uses for locating people who may have been abducted or
mm-hmm.
Locating targets that are.
Well, I mean, you can can use it to find your next house. You know, where's your optimum location to live? You can use it to find that, and then find where your next house is going to be. You can find out what's the best college for your child to attend 10 years from now, and you can find that out now, and you know, and
start planning.
So it has all kinds of uses.
I have a question. Originally this was used in the military. It was top secret, and it really wasn't released to the public until that program was released. And then through the Freedom of Information Act, and also people who were involved with the program who wrote books and did courses. Right now, remote viewing is pretty much available to anybody who wants to study it. But what about the more unethical uses of remote viewing? What about corporations, who aren't always real ethical, using remote viewers to perhaps gather information in order to harm people? Have you heard of any of that sort of thing going on? Is there anything within remote viewing, I guess the whole idea of it, that can shield visionary information from people with malintent?
Well, theoretically, it's possible for somebody without any scruples to learn to become a remote viewer and use it against people.
Yeah, kind of like hired by corporations, or whatever.
Yeah, I would rather say they can't use it against you. Like, remote viewing is passive, so you can't use it to harm somebody. But you can use it, theoretically, to gather information about someone to harm
somebody
them.
Else can harm them. Yeah, right. Well, that's what I'm curious about. You know, do you have any knowledge of industry using this in less than ethical means?
No,
spying, you know, like trying to find out what their competitor's up to.
I haven't heard of any of that. Now, using it for research and development and sort of like a corporate espionage, I think that could occur, but I haven't actually heard of anybody doing anything like that.
Russell Targ once told me, and I don't have anything other than Russell's information about this, that the Russians actually were able to strangle people remotely. Not they didn't kill them, but they got them where they, you know, were really feeling uncomfortable. So that is an interesting use of it that that is possible. Evidently,
yeah, that would be called a stage 10 remote action. It's very closely related to psychokinesis. And that's something that I'm working on right now, is the development of stage 10 and 11. Excuse me. Stage 10 deals with the actual manipulation of things at the site, target site. The target site is, for instance, you breaking your arm is the target. The target site would be wherever that occurred.
Right.
So manipulating objects and matter at the target site is stage 10. And then stage 11 is manipulating, or what they would term perturbing, time, slowing it down, speeding it up.
Like with a car wreck, you could do that,
Yeah.
Because a car wreck occurs at a certain point in time, and if the two cars aren't there at the same time, there's not going to be a wreck.
Right. So what we're kind of experimenting with now is the development of those stages, because now with Kronos, the reason that's one of the things about Kronos, it's an intermediary application. It was developed in order to get to stage 11, which is manipulation of time. And so now that we have a working metaphor, working protocol, working methodology of time, even though it's a very basic analogy for time, we know how it sort of works now, and we can use that now in stage 11. So it's all theoretical right now, working it out on paper, developing cues. But it's looking very good, because since we have this metaphor for time now, we can actually plot things in time. And because we have that, we can determine and influence when things can happen in time. So it's something that we're working on.
I have another question just from my previous interview. I think it was with Dr. Targ. He said that when people were remote viewing, say at an airplane crash scene, there was the remote viewers who went and found that, I think it was a downed Russian jet with a nuclear weapon on board or something. You remember that one that Jimmy Carter announced prematurely here in Atlanta and kind of blew the cover on the program? He was saying that when people died in the crash, that the remote viewers could actually see their spirits or whatever their I guess fourth dimensional aspects were there. Do you think from your own experience and what has been described by other remote viewers that the remote viewers are actually in the fourth dimension observing the third dimension?
Well, I don't like to think of it as dimensions, but it's more of an information pattern.
Okay.
What they're actually seeing is an energy form. And everything, essentially, when you boil it down to its basic components, is an energetic form. So it's not necessarily in some other dimension. One of the things that we discovered was we needed a new metaphor, a new symbol to represent how the universe is structured. And this came out directly from the data.
Mm-hmm.
We can think of time and everything within time is very hierarchical in nature. So there is a universe, but there are actually multiple what we'll call world lines. So this goes into the physics aspect, because
right.
There's a theory of physics that says that there's multiple world lines. Now, those world lines you can also call timelines.
Right.
But not all of them manifest. So there's a universe.
Quantum possibilities.
Yes. So there's a universe, and there are actually multiple universes, but we don't exist across all of those universes. Each one of them is individual and discrete.
Mm-hmm.
Within each universe, there are multiple world lines.
Right.
And then within each world line, there are multiple dimensions, and within each of those dimensions, there are multiple energy forms.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see when we remote view someone who is in the process of dying, we see their energy form. But their energy form doesn't necessarily enter into another dimension. It's still part of this three-dimensional reality. It's just sort of...
It separates from their body, though.
It separates from their body.
Right, exactly.
And so it doesn't really enter into another dimension. So
okay.
It's more of a terminology or a semantic problem at this point, because there's all these different words to describe the same thing, but some of them are used out of context. Like, you know, people say, "Oh, that is incredible," but the word "incredible" means that it lacks credibility. It doesn't mean that it's amazing. So people use words out of context, and what we discovered is that that's one of the problems of linguistics, is that, we need to come up with a definite terminology for certain things that describe actually how they are, not how we would like them to be.
Well, if you
but
can
to get back
actually,
to me,
I'm sorry.
What? But to get back to the question was, I had to do that to get the terminology down.
Okay.
It doesn't actually enter into another dimension, because that dimension, we can't cross dimensions.
But when you actually view somebody who's dying, you view them in whatever framework, you know, you're viewing them on your mind screen, obviously, but you view the energy form separating from the body. My next question is, have you ever been able to communicate with that energy form?
Yes.
Okay.
In a very simplistic way.
Okay.
We remote viewed entities. And these entities do not have a physical form. They're energy forms.
Mm-hmm.
And,
no physical body.
Yeah. And it communicated to us that it could see us. And so Actually, that is exactly the phrase it used.
Yeah, well, I'm a little clairvoyant data. Myself.
It said, I see you.
I see
and
you.
And so I put down, so I wrote down on the paper because the immediate concept that entered into my mind, and we're trained as remote viewers, everything that enters into your mind has a place to be
down,
put on the paper.
Yeah,
so and immediately I wrote down, I see you.
So well, that's fascinating, isn't it? Was it your idea that this entity that you saw used to have a human body or never had had a body in the 30s?
It never had a body.
Never had a body, okay. Interesting. Did you see what it looked like?
It was Satan. We remote viewed the idea of Satan, and it it exists as an information pattern, and you know, an information pattern is an energy pattern.
Right.
And so it could see us, and it saw us, and we had, you know, I had an actual conversation, rudimentary conversation with it, and it felt that it got the raw end of whatever deal
of course it would. You don't appreciate me. I actually do a lot of good.
it was funny because it was actually because our entire team was remote viewing it, and I was one of the last people to actually do the session because it was a blind session. One of the other guys was acting as a project manager. So I was one of the last people to do the session, and it was really kind of peeved that people were remote viewing. It was like, oh, not remote viewing me again. You know,
no kidding. Invasion of privacy.
Yeah. It was like,
Satan likes his privacy. That's interesting. I see you. Well, that's fascinating, isn't it? I think we can learn so much about all of these, what you call informational patterns, which I think is a good way to put it, because really we don't yet know what capacity we have as this information processor. I mean, we don't have any clue what our true potential is. We just haven't tried a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. Our biggest problem is linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem, because the terminology that people use, you know, and the word incredible is just, that's one of my pet peeve words.
Right.
You know, people say, oh my God, that's incredible. No, this doesn't lack credibility. That's one of the problems is linguistics. And then once we overcome that then we can really do some things, because then when we're talking about something, we're all on the same page.
Right.
It's all about having a common frame of reference. When I talk with computers about somebody, talk to somebody about computers, I should say, there's a technical terms that I will use that will throw them off, because they're maybe not an information systems architect like I am.
Right.
So I have to, simplify the words and everything to make them understand this is what's going on with your computer and this is why it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have, one of the first things we need to do is solve the linguistics problem so that we're all speaking the same language and conceptually thinking about the same things. Once we can do that, then our biggest obstacle is our thinking mind, because our thinking mind is constantly analyzing what we're doing, what we're saying, and it's also constantly filtering out information that we would otherwise have access to, because your brain has access to all the information everywhere in the universe. But it filters out all of that information so that it doesn't overwhelm you, because most of us are very simple in thinking and how we think about things. So we have to overcome our thinking mind. And that's the second biggest problem. Once we solve those two problems, we'll find that our capacity to know and do will become probably limitless.
I was reading something, or actually watching, listening to some DVDs and CDs on the Matrix experience. I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but he's got a great theory, and it's one that, you know, I'm in the healing world, obviously. We do healing, and to do remarkable healings, you need to keep your left mind focused on something trivial while your right mind does the real work. So there's a theory out there, at least in some of the new healing theories and methods, that whenever you go into something with an intent, say to help somebody, you will get these things that you have to do to keep your left mind busy while your right mind goes ahead and does, you know, the more miraculous stuff, like dissolving tumors and, you know, the stuff that we don't have a scientific explanation for yet, but yet we see again and again, you know, in things called spontaneous remission. And mm-hmm. I just feel, and I've got a good intuitive sense for ideas, because I've been interviewing, like I said, most of the physicists, the superstring, Dr. Amit Goswami. I mean, I've interviewed just about everybody on consciousness, that one of the biggest problems is what you just said, keeping the left brain out of the way, because the left brain will insert information that it thinks should be there. That's why remote viewing doesn't preload you, you know, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
If you can somehow disable the left brain from inserting useless information, you get much better remote viewing, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, the technical aspects of remote viewing, but people do this all the time and don't know they're doing remote viewing.
Yeah, well, disabling what you call disabling, that is actually what the protocol of remote viewing does. It keeps your thinking brain constantly in the mode of, okay, what's the next percept? What's the next percept? While your right brain is getting the information.
Exactly.
So yeah,
That's so important.
But we actually need the left brain, because after you've got all this data from remote viewing, then you need to analyze it, and
exactly.
That's where the left brain comes in.
Right.
So it's really a matter of, you know, kind of toning it down, or at least learning not to listen to it.
not to listen. But that's during the data gathering phase of it. But then later on, you do have to.
Yeah.
You do have to analyze it. So are you familiar with the WebBot project at all?
Yes. Yes. I look at their data all the time.
Can you correlate what they're doing to the Matrix at all? Have you thought about that?
Yes. Actually, what I do is when I remote view short-term events, and short-term for me is like 6 months, and then long term is anything longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
Their data pretty much corroborates my data, our remote viewing data. So it's very interesting. Now, and that's another interesting point in remote viewing, is that it's very easy to remote view things that have a high emotional impact.
Right.
Or are catastrophic and huge events. And that's the same thing with the web bot. In fact, they even say that in part of their disclaimer, that it's very easy to see huge events. It's very mm-hmm. difficult for them to capture information pertaining to very small events. And that's very true with remote viewing as well.
And they were, I was reading something recently from them, and they said, well, back when they were remote viewing Cheney and, you know, gunshot, they, of course, assumed that Cheney was going to get shot, not that Cheney was going to shoot somebody.
So,
I love that one, you know. Yeah, that, you know, you go with what your logical mind would say. You know, the vice president would be much more likely to get shot than he would to shoot somebody, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, you know, that's,
but, yeah, I think
great.
That, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very easily to misinterpret data, and
exactly.
that's one of the big pitfalls of remote viewing, is misinterpretation of data, misanalysis.
I have a theory. I have something called synthesis medicine. In fact, I wrote about it in a book called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, a book that I'm in with Michelle Obama and Oprah, Jane Fonda, and 42 other women leaders. But synthesis, let's talk about synthesis prophecy. But, you know, you probably don't like the word prophecy, but whatever other linguistic word would go on it. One of the ways we can really, really determine accuracy of a method is to use different methods to see if you get the same result. The WebBot's very interesting because, of course, it's technological and doesn't require really anything other than human interpretation. Your remote viewing is also, you know, very well tested. It's very, you've gotten a lot of problems with your new techniques solved that were major problems before. And then you have your other, clairvoyant and astrological too. I mean, the astrological data is very interesting. It is very predictive of exactly when something is going to happen. I read in the Mountain Astrologer in August of 2001 that on 9/11/2001 there would be a major terrorist attack leading to war. One of my patients had got me the magazine as a gift. So that's very predictive if you think about it. So there's all these different methods, and I would really be interested in somebody, correlating all of them, you know, actually running correlations. Because if you've got hits on each of them, like in your the DVD that I just viewed for this interview, your target was the next major terrorist attack in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get that, to correlate it with these other methods, I think that would be extremely good, verification of everybody, you know, of everybody, but also of what you're coming up with.
Yeah, that's a big job, though. I mean, it would be great to do that. I wish I had the time.
Well, I'm not saying you should, because you're developing this, but, you know, somebody who is a student of all of the methods, with enough understanding of them to maybe, like a project where, you know, somebody from the WebBot team, the remote viewing team, somebody who's like a very accurate clairvoyant, someone who's a very accurate astrologer. You know, I know some of the astrologers that have done work for the White House. You know, I mean, those people tend to be very accurate. So, but everybody kind of meeting and comparing notes. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know,
that,
I think it'd be great. Because, you know, each method has its problems, okay? Clairvoyance, as you know, time is a terrible problem for clairvoyance. And astrology can tell you when something's going to happen, but not necessarily what it is, you see?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, no, it's true. You know, astrology is all about when.
Yeah.
But, you know, with what you're doing, and then it's almost like the WebBot can just be a check on everything that's big. I mean, it's not going to be able to tell, you know, probably where some child is abducted or anything.
Right.
But the big things, the 2012 question, all of that. But it's just an idea. I like the synthesis aspect of the best and the brightest in all these different fields getting together and comparing notes. I think
the cross checks that could be done or would be pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, I don't like the word prophecy. I like a word phrase. I like to use predictive analysis.
There you go. That's much better. Much better. And you're right. Prophecy has a lot of implications of all these different religions and everything. It just gets very messy. But let's talk a little bit about some of the predictive events that have come out of your work. Whether it be terrorist attack, 2012, whatever you want to talk about, what do you see?
Well, we did a project, and you can actually see the project up at Dame's forums, the remote viewing RV community. That's what it's called,
RVcommunity.net. Okay.
And it was one of the public tests of Kronos, and we looked at planet Earth next. Planet Earth's next catastrophe cataclysm. So it's a worldwide catastrophe cataclysm. And it actually doesn't occur in 2012.
Okay.
It occurs according to that test, and it corroborates the private test that we did.
Mm-hmm.
It occurs sometime early in 2013. So it's near. So that means that our interpretation of the Mayan calendar and all those calendrical things that say there's going to be something in 2012 is a few months off.
Right.
Do you know the nature of this? Yes. It's going to encompass, it's a galactic event. It's something that's much, much bigger than,
just the Earth.
Yeah. It's huge. And it's going to affect the entire solar system.
It's going to heat it up?
Yes. There's going to, the Earth is going to become like a great big rotisserie.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's going to shift. There's going to be a geographical pole shift as
mm-hmm.
well.
Right.
We're already in the midst of the magnetic pole shift.
We are. I mean, that's been shown scientifically.
Yeah. So it's all occurring right now, and it's all because of where we are at in the global ecliptic. We're going through what they call the dark rift right now.
Right.
We've actually been in the dark rift since about 1989. It's taken us this long to traverse. And once we get to the midpoint, which
mm-hmm.
is going to be right around 2012,
right.
when we're going to start seeing some major upheavals, according to the
mm-hmm.
data.
I keep telling people now's not the time to have electronic medical records, but nobody's listening to me. You really want paper records. You don't want your bank statements and everything on just electronic.
Yeah.
It's not the time.
And that's going to be a big problem.
It is going to be a big problem. Yeah. You know, people are just not thinking. And pole shifts, like you know, have been intermittent, and they're able to be proven with geology analysis. So it's not something
mm-hmm.
that's not, you know, like we're due for another one. It's not like it's some science fiction thing.
No, and these things happen very suddenly.
And at intervals.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah,
so I don't know what people, you know, Obama's group has decided that they're going to put all this money into electronic medical records. For what reason, you know? So it can be wiped out in a matter of hours? Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Well, everybody ought to keep a paper copy of everything, okay?
There's going to be so much going on in the very near future. And civilization as we know it is going to cease to exist. It's going to be very, very much different. Electronics are probably not going to work unless they're heavily shielded.
Yep. Go out and buy a lot of aluminum foil is what I say.
Yeah, it's going to be probably very much like a Mad Max scenario for a number of years after.
Or a Book of Eli. That's another one that's out that's interesting.
Now, I've heard of that, but I haven't actually.
Yeah. It's interesting because the main character talks openly about spiritual hearing. He's talking to a woman. He says, "Well, I hear voices not out there but in my head, and they tell me what to do." And he's guided across the country. He's guided step by step through spiritual hearing. So it's really very interesting because, you know, it's how to survive in a really dangerous world, and the answer, according to the people who made the movie, is spiritual hearing, which is probably pretty accurate if you think about it.
Yeah.
So we think that this cataclysmic event is basically in 2013.
Yes, early 2013. Sometime in the first quarter, possibly the second. We're in the process of doing another check because I'm working on the next version of Kronos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the version that's been released, that's really version 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making cue modifications and targeting modifications for my private group to increase its accuracy even more. So we're working on that, and we're in the process of reworking that whole Mm-hmm. Project Noodle is what we called it.
Right.
It was Project Noodle Phase 1 and 2. The first phase was just looking at the event itself to see if there was going to be
something,
a cataclysm that would engulf the entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
And there is.
Right.
So the second phase was looking at when it was going to occur.
Okay.
And that's when Kronos came into play.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
It looks about early 2013.
Okay. I'd like to give you an opportunity to give your contact information, and also I'd like to invite you back on the show to talk more about GeoLock when you feel
that'd be
appropriate,
great.
Since we didn't, well, I don't know much about it since I haven't really looked at your stuff yet. And also, I think that is a very important aspect of remote viewing is GeoLock. I mean, it's been a big problem. Like, say, if somebody is kidnapped exactly to find out where they were. I knew the Patty Hearst information, but GeoLock would have been very important for that. Okay, so go ahead and give your contact information, if you could, please.
Sure. People can send me emails to director@psiint.net. That's director@psiint.net. So there's two I's in there. Science is a sort of an acronym for Psi Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go to any of the websites. We have three. TheRVC.org, that's TheRVC.org,
mm-hmm.
and that's our main research site. You can also go to RVChronos.com, that's RVChronos.com, and you can go to rvgeolock.com. That's rvgeolock.com. And there's email addresses, I believe, at each of those websites that you can send us email to as well.
Yeah, and I advise people to go on YouTube because there's a whole series of things, both with Michael, Ed Doms, and other leaders in this field that are fascinating. I was watching all the ones about ET and the crop circles, and it was just great. Well, this has been Dr. Susan Call. We've had a great interview with Michael Rees on RV Cronus and hope to have him back on RV GeoLock, which is the geographic lock of location of where something's going to happen, which, of course, is as important as the RV Cronus concept of when it's going to happen. Next week, we are interviewing Linda Starr Wolf on shamanic breathwork, journeying beyond the limits of self. And we have the Noetic Science meeting on July 15th, which is a Thursday at 7:15 p.m. David Bracey will be speaking about brain state conditioning. This is a new technology that can help one overcome anger issues, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other problems with the brain. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. We've been talking with Michael Rees, RV Cronus, and I encourage everybody to go to his sites and especially look at all the videos. They're fascinating and actually give a great explanation of what we know so far about remote viewing. Thanks a lot, Michael. Hope to have you back soon.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plasticos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plasticos?
Plasticos is in Dunwoody. Plasticos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plasticos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.